critically analyzing national affairs. This is State of the Nation with Timothy Shea and Brian McClain on today's News Talk. TNT.
This is State of the Nation on today's News Talk with Brian McClain and Timothy Shea. We're live from Texas in New York. You can visit us on the web at tntradio.live. A routine traffic stop turned deadly in central New York last night. 33-year-old Christopher R. Murphy sped off from the stop in the Tipperary Hill neighborhood on Syracuse's west side. The officer did not give chase due to the speeds that would have been required, but identified the address in the suburb of Liverpool, New York, to which the vehicle was registered, as per Syracuse Police Department protocol. Backup from the County Sheriff's Department was requested and received, and the deputy and officer approached the vehicle together and had discovered ammunition inside the vehicle when they were ambushed by Murphy from inside the house. Shot and killed were a 16-year veteran Onondaga County deputy sheriff and a Syracuse Police Department officer on the job for 2 years. Their identities have been withheld pending notification of their families. The deputy and officer returned fire, killing Murphy before succumbing to their wounds. Brian, this just shows you that violence is across all ethnic groups. It's across all socioeconomic groups, and no city in America is safe.
Yeah, this guy was, if I recall from my morning research, was on, was doing cocaine partying with cocaine and weapons. So, you know, clearly no amount of gun control laws or anything would have stopped this. This is someone who allowed themselves to, you know, succumb to the evils of drugs and decided to commit suicide by cop, or decided to, you know, that he was invincible. These things happen to people like that. Really unfortunate, though.
It's tragic, especially for the families of the deputy and the officer. I have some personal connection to this case. My father was commissioner of 911 services in Onondaga County, in which Syracuse and Liverpool are located, back 30 years ago. And the good news, Brian, is that the system worked. Okay. And all points call went out, a nearest car request went out. That's why the Onondaga County Sheriff was there with the Syracuse Police Department officer, who was out of his jurisdiction but was pursuing an act of crime. Other vehicles that you've seen on the video will be seen, including Onondaga County Park Police. It doesn't matter what department, if you're close, you respond. We've got a quick clip. It's only 10 seconds, but it is a clip of the shootout. And I just want to play that so people realize just how horrific this was in a suburban neighborhood. Brian, that sounds like something out of a movie. It was horrific. What happened, the officers reported hearing a semi-automatic rifle racked inside the house, and one of the two officers was immediately shot, and the other returned fire before he himself was murdered. All three ended up dying, but tremendous quick thinking and bravery by the two law enforcement officers to return fire and take out the assailant. Unfortunately, both of them passed away.
Yep. Very brave to, you know, come under fire like that, take a hit that's going to be fatal, and shoot back and, you know, take that criminal out. I don't know if there were any of the other officers were there at that point that were involved in
Not
that,
at that,
but that definitely. Okay. Well, the two men that got hit, the two officers that got hit, you can hear the superior firepower there that they have, even though they're up against someone with a rifle. I hear a lot of rifle rounds there, but when it ends, you can tell those cops are finishing the duty.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're both heroes. In fact, we haven't had a police officer killed since 1990. And that police officer was an old high school friend of mine, used to high jump against him, Wally Howard. And in fact, the evidence was taken to the Wally Howard Forensic Center here in Syracuse. As I said, the good news is the system worked. The 911 system worked because an urgent call went out and there was an overwhelming response in support of the two officers once the officer down call went out. Brian, my only concern is There are a lot of shootings in Syracuse, even shootings that have made the national media, shootings at Destiny USA, the big mall here, fourth largest mall in the country, shootings on the nightly every single weekend at some of the poorer neighborhoods in town. And we're not getting that overwhelming police response. And I think people are asking, wait a second, it's great that they did it in support of their fellow officers. Why aren't they also doing it in support of the citizenry?
Well, yeah, that's probably a really good question to be asking. And I imagine it begs a lot more questions, very technical questions, cultural questions, questions about decisions that have been made in the wake of George Floyd and BLM movement, questions that should be asked about, Soros DAs, defunding police, you know, restorative justice and all these things, because it all plays in.
It absolutely does. And you're exactly correct. These questions need to be asked. And more importantly, they need to be answered. Do you have a suggestion for a possible guest you'd like to hear on TNT? Or perhaps you have a topic you feel we should discuss? Then we want to hear from you. Simply complete the suggestion form on the TNT website. Help us make a difference on today's news talk, TNT.
Delivering the facts.
Source I can trust.
Today's news talk radio, TNT.
Many, if not most Americans, no longer trust anything the government tells us, including the quarterly jobs reports. From redefining what it means to be unemployed to months later seasonal adjustments, it's become increasingly clear that the jobs report is not a good barometer of the economy. Joining us now to discuss is the Director of Public Relations at RedBalloon.Work, Isaac Lopez. Isaac, welcome to State of the Nation.
Hey, Timothy. Hey, Brian. Thanks so much for having me on.
Isaac, what is the jobs created scam that large corporations are running in partnership with the state and federal governments?
There was a viral TikTok that went just far and wide covering the process that mid to large sized companies are incentivized to create a certain amount of jobs so they can get tax breaks. And so the jobs number we see at a national level, which come from the state level, are somewhat inflated by these numbers.
So you get credit for creating the job, but there's no obligation to fill it?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
I'm sorry, Brian.
And I think there's a couple interesting takeaways from that. I mean, one of the things that went really unreported, Fox picked it up, but at the end of 2023, we found out that the Biden administration had revised down about 500,000 jobs from all of the monthly reports that we get at the beginning of every month on the jobs report. So what we found out is that they quietly revised every month that looked like a great jobs report. They revised it down probably between 25 to 50K worth of jobs. So it just, the economy and labor market in particular was not nearly as strong last year as it was touted to be.
So we're seeing so much false numbers. So I feel like we're being lied to with statistics. Like everybody reads Bill Gates' favorite books in the government or something. We're looking at the CPI numbers. We see a lot of lies, a lot of obfuscation, a lot of things not included. We look at the DOJ crime numbers. Again, not even counting crime statistics from Chicago, LA, Baltimore, New York, and multiple other places. Financial reporting all around, very dodgy, very sort of ginned up. I mean, how's this affecting people that are actually looking for jobs? Like, what's your take on the actual job market versus, you know, the numbers that the government wants to show us?
Yeah, that's a great question, Brian. I think one of the things that we realized at RedBalloon when we were trying to make informed business decisions is that we didn't have a data set to really rely on. So we created one with Public Square, who's a partner company, and we survey 80,000 companies across the U.S. that are generally small to medium-sized businesses. So it's really a cross-section of the economy that isn't really covered by mainstream media. So we actually have our own barometer to figure out if this lines up with what we're seeing at the national level with the jobs report. And what we're finding is that a lot of businesses have gone into a holding pattern when it comes to their hiring, which is really impactful for us to know as one of the leading job boards in the US, especially in the parallel economy. So for us to know that 70% of people don't intend to hire or reduce staff, they're just kind of in a wait and see moment. That gives us the intelligence we need to make an informed decision. And then come to find out, 3/4 of the businesses that we survey have seen their supplier prices increase, which you don't hear about that in the CPI numbers. Everyone's cheering for 3.2, 3.5% year over year. But the reality is that there's a lot more pain being felt by the businesses in the U.S. right now.
I can attest to that as someone who advises small businesses. Every single business that we talk to is in trouble. I mean, from private jet companies that cut back on what they did at the Masters tournament this weekend to local grocery stores to gift shops. Everybody's hurting. As you said, their supplier costs are increasing tremendously. We're seeing that fast food restaurants now in California with the $20 an hour wage are cutting way back, not only in terms of number of employees, but their hours. Does RedBalloon.work screen companies so that you can verify that jobs listed on the board are actually open or and they're actually looking to be filled and they're not just pro forma?
Yeah, Timothy, that's a great question because there is a lot of companies that are posting jobs for positions that really aren't open, but they're trying to keep the door open for future candidates. So the Forbes reported on a survey of 1,000 hiring managers that showed 50% of companies currently just have jobs listed where they don't intend to make a hire currently, but they want a warm talent pool. So they want someone who's able to, they want to be able to cast their nets out into a group of workers that are available to be hired. So I do understand that strategy. Most of the jobs on RedBalloon are employers that really need people right away. And so because it does cost to list your job on RedBalloon, so not many people right now on RedBalloon are listing their jobs just to have an open position because a lot of our companies are actively looking for hardworking Americans.
And how do recruiters and headhunters play into this whole ecosystem? Because you look at some of the other, you know, sites and sometimes, you know, maybe you're looking for an IT job and you'll discover, oh, they have headhunters and recruiters, you know. Is that as common inside RedBalloon.work? Is there a headhunter recruiter factor? And is it even, you know, what's your take on the whole factor of headhunters and recruiters?
Yeah, Brian, I'm glad you asked it. I mean, this interview is perfectly set up, so I really appreciate it. I mean, the fact of the matter is that we talk to companies and hiring managers all the time, and they say that it's just really messy right now. There's no one-size-fits-all solution to hiring, so they have in-house recruiters. They have hiring managers. They go out and hire executive-level recruiters that cost $15,000 to $30,000 if you want to fill a position, and they post on LinkedIn or Indeed or on RedBalloon. What we've been able to help solidify is that, hey, if you come to RedBalloon, you can post your job, you can list your job, and then you can also use RedBalloon Recruiter, which we, since we have the scale of a national job board and we have the ability to go into our own databases, we can help small business owners hire at a really affordable rate, so much so that they're telling other people about it, and we don't have much marketing to do on that end. So a lot of people are enthusiastic because hiring has been so messy for so long that now they're looking for an affordable option that is still competitive.
And when you do advertising, it's brilliant, like that black and white video of the little children with the voiceover saying, when I grow up, I want to be a middle manager. It's just brilliant, that ad. And I know that it won several awards. I think RedBalloon.work is exactly the kind of company that the marketplace has needed, because you folks actually do your due diligence and are providing a fresh alternative at an unbelievably reasonable rate. Every time we talk, I say this, but I still can't get over your rates for employers looking to list jobs. Really, there's no reason for a company not to use RedBalloon Work. Isaac Lopez, I want to thank you so much for coming on. And it's a great conversation. That's why people listen to State of the Nation. This was not scripted. We didn't send you questions and you had a chance to write answers. We were just having a conversation tonight. And we always love talking to you right here on today's News Talk, TNT.
TNT's Jason Burmis.
Peace through strength. Now, on its surface, it sounds very good, right? Well, we're going to have a strong military and a strong defense, and that is going to bring us peace. But when you just scratch the surface a little itty bitty bit, what do they say? They say things like, we've got to give Ukraine the weapons they need to do the job. That would be impossible because there are no amount of weapon systems we can give Ukraine to end the conflict in Russia. Period. Full stop. I'm in a place called reality. So that is not an answer. That is an establishment moment that lets me know they're riding the flow of whatever will keep them in office, keep them on television, and keep them empowered.
Jason Burmis on today's News Talk, TNT. Today's News Talk Radio.
I do a lot of streaming radio.
I do a lot of free streaming.
TNTRadio.live.
Well, who exactly is deciding what you can say, post, email, or think? This is a big question on a lot of people's minds, not just here in America these days, as we see new legislation being passed internationally all over the place that really makes one stop and say, hey, who's deciding what we can say and can't say, what meme we can have on our phone, etc.? It's gotten a little bit wacky out there. And joining us now to discuss is the CEO of Liberation Technology Services, a company at the forefront of the private cloud hosting industry, groundbreaking cybersecurity solutions, and the pioneer of the liquid-cooled edge data centers. So prior to building Liberation Tech, he was with the executive office of the President of the United States as a key figure within the Office of Presidential Advance for the 45th President, Donald J. Trump. His name is Andrew Ridow. Andrew, welcome to State of the Nation. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, guys.
So who is in charge of these things? When I look at it, I see sort of this cabal of technocrats and Fortune 100, 500 people, I don't know, intelligence agencies, our very government itself, but it does get a little bit murky.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And I think Elon Musk exposed all of that when, you know, the Twitter files started coming out. Really, more than anything, it is the unelected, unrepresentative, really unnamed individuals that work at a lot of these big technology companies that really have the ability to shape the narrative in this country. But we also still see, you know, folks like in the Biden administration that are advocating for even more cooperation across these platforms so that they can control the narrative around the election and suppress spamming and misinformation and things like that. However, you know, it seems to really be one-sided as more and more details come out.
Yeah, it really does. You know, Timothy and I were just talking about some of the stuff that we're seeing on Edward Snowden's X.com account today, and he's talking about 502. You know, it appears as though this newest iteration of 502 is, if it passes the Senate and gets signed in, until I think April of 2025, we're looking at expanded. Is it 502 or 702? I can't remember.
702.
I believe. Yeah, mm-hmm. Thank you. 702 capabilities, you know, related to FISA. And it looks really, really odious, this piece of legislation. It looks like it could turn just about anyone and anything into a spy for the government. I'll just use that as the term instead of that whole list I rattled off.
Yeah, and you know, it's really amazing because we're not only seeing it on the kind of policy side, but we're seeing it in the private sector side. You know, Google just put some new policies in place February 1st, which will make it incredibly easy for them to not only deploy AI, but to completely censor email communications with ideals, words that they don't necessarily agree with. And just like that, you can get three strikes. You can end up on a list. There's no real due process in place anymore, especially at these technology companies.
And we were just talking an hour ago in this exact slot with our friend Basil Valentine from the United Kingdom, who is telling us how their government there, obviously the prime minister, is both the leader of the majority party in parliament, but he's also in charge of the permanent civil service. So it's a blend of the executive and legislative branches. And that's really what the Democrats have built here. The State Department, the DOD, all work kind of independently of the president. They don't care who's in office. They keep on doing what they're going to do. And their real mission is to advance the American empire and not to advance the policies of whoever happens to be sitting in the Oval Office at any given time.
Oh, you're exactly right. It's essentially a new fourth branch of government that is completely unchecked. You know, you see a lot of these policies being driven at the department level that really go through very little oversight, that go through very few checks and balances. And, you know, the President Trump had some policies in place that would really remove a lot of these individuals. They're career electeds. You know, they don't have to show up and perform. They just have to take their paycheck and nod and push the agenda forward. But President Trump had set it up so that there was going to be pretty wide and sweeping reform in that space if he had gotten his second term. So hopefully after the 2024 elections, we'll see just that, the thinning out of the executive branch of some of these agencies and departments, because, you know, there are tens of thousands of individuals that have been in the different departments for decades, right? And they are just pushing the Clinton-Obama agenda. And trust me, when I was at the White House, we would have to fight tooth and nail to get anything done when working with the State Department or Energy or Ag. It doesn't matter because so many of these careers just really put their heels in and didn't want to do a thing.
It's amazing to me because, you know, the standard talking point you'll hear from many Democrat politicians or RINO politicians or, I don't know, spokespeople, pundits, is that all this censorship is simply something that we all agree to by virtue of joining their platform. But what we're talking about today goes beyond all that because it proves that there is a desire inside the government to weaponize all forms of communication, to completely strip any semblance of a digital Fourth Amendment right, if such a thing exists. I'll just, you know, refer to it as our Fourth Amendment, via technocracy, via corporate excuse. It's its own thing. You know, you signed you said you agree to the terms and services. But like, at what point do you think this country and in particular our politicians will realize this is a vast panopticon that has been planned for many, many years and has intentions that go much deeper than national security? And national security is another one of those things, I don't know, maybe like a woman, that we can't define all of a sudden in this country.
Yeah, you know, I think it's unique that they make that claim that they're independent, it's a private company and things like that. But then you look at Section 230, which basically shields them from any repercussion. I don't know another business in the United States that is essentially shielded from lawsuits, right? And they can't be held accountable.
Yeah, big
and
pharma.
But it's not as expressly stated with big pharma, but at least in the technology companies, you really see this kind of do whatever you want. You know, it works, granted, in the Democrats' favor because they can control the message. I mean, it's a scary kind of slope that we're facing because, you know, you look at Russia, you look at China, when they pushed to full communism, what is the first thing that they did? Control the narrative in the nation. And once you're able to do that, then you're able to form the population and everyone else. And so it's something that I think we really need alternatives to be. That's why we started Liberation, to serve as that digital infrastructure, that day-to-day, that digital town square that people can come to, not have to worry about the suppression, the oversight. And, you know, it's still a capitalistic society. And so if 100 million Americans decide they don't want to use those Silicon platforms, well, we have a very different story going on then.
All right. Well, that's why we have a headline. Timbo, we got a headline we're going to take here. And when we come back, Timbo's going to bring us right back in with that question he was about to ask you on State of the Nation at today's News Talk. This is TNT.
Big news.
Big news.
Big news.
The biggest breaking news story.
Holy crap.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. Over the weekend, Iran conducted a series of airstrikes against Israel as a retaliatory measure for the earlier bombing of an Iranian consular compound in Syria. President Joe Biden has advanced further in securing the Democratic nomination for re-election after winning party contests in Wyoming and Alaska. Tesla shares fell this morning following the company's announcement that it will lay off more than 10% of its global workforce due to declining demand for its electric vehicles amidst intense market competition.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Andrew and Brian, it was amazing to me when Google actually came out recently and said that their terms of service would enable them to be able to censor any ideas with which they disagreed. Completely undercutting with impunity the entire rationale of the protections they received under Section 230. And a lot of businesses, my own MAGA Institute included, hated using Amazon Web Services. Is your company competing with Amazon Web Services? Is that the platform that patriotic businesses should switch to avoid such censorship at the machine level, at the ISP level, at the most fundamental level of their business?
Yeah. So not only have we built out our own cloud, which gives us an immense amount of redundancy, we can host, you know, just the smallest websites all the way up to very large operations. But we've also created other platforms such as a MailChimp alternative and a Microsoft Teams alternative. All those day-to-day business tools that individuals need to get away from the Silicon Valley companies. That's exactly what we're building at Liberation.
We love the sound of that, you know. Do you feel, how's your lawyer team? Are you concerned about like some of the developments that we're talking about today impacting your business? Because, you know, clearly you want to protect the privacy and the rights and the American values of your clients. What happens if this passes and all of a sudden you start getting, you start getting, you know, notes from some shady government intel organization asking you, you know, hey, we need all the conversations from this guy over here, this gal over here. They seem to be a thought criminal.
Yeah, so we're doing a lot of really interesting things. And to your point, we have a phenomenal legal team. We operate on a zero knowledge type architecture. So we're hands off to the point we can't even access our clients' data. Ultimately, if those three-letter agencies want to have a conversation or look at information, they should do what the Constitution lays out and go subpoena those individuals directly. We're also building in a very strategic way, both here domestically, but also starting to build internationally on Native American tribal lands, offshore and things like that, just to give us that enhanced redundancy so that our clients can pick where their information is hosted, what kind of laws are they governed by. And really, we're starting to incorporate some of the latest and greatest in cybersecurity. So really, even if they wanted to try to hack it, it would take them about a decade to do so.
I love it. I love it. As an IT person, I really appreciate that because that's what we wanted. That was the internet we were trying to build in the 80s and the 90s and the early 2000s. We wanted a place of freedom, You know, if someone wanted to go out there and say dumb things, fine. We trusted that the public was, you know, smart enough to block, to put aside, to ignore. And now there's this whole nanny feeling like, oh, well, that person might be, you know, discussing misinformation, disinformation, malinformation. I mean, this whole propping up of the nanny state and the sacrosanctity of the state narrative, if you will, with a capital S, seems to have overshadowed that desire for a place of freedom and free market capitalism and a free market of ideas. So, I mean, is that one of the things that kind of drove you to build Liberation Tech?
Oh, precisely. You know, being in the front lines of the 2020 election, seeing just what happened when these technologies decide to really point at you and go after you with all their might, it became evident that there really needed to be some more better competition in the market. You know, additionally, I think a lot of these Silicon Valley companies kind of forget the fact that it's okay to have different opinions, right? It's okay to have different views. And, you know, to your point, when the internet was founded, it was meant to be that digital town square where people can go and share ideas, create debate, sell goods online. And we've really moved away from that, from just a, you know, singular point of view, a singular narrative. And that's incredibly dangerous because, you know, you look at the founding of America and why we are the greatest nation in the world. It's because we were okay to debate. We were okay to agree to disagree. And, you know, that is what we're still trying to preserve.
Indeed, Andrew, we used to say, I might disagree with what you have to say, but I'll defend with my life your right to say it. It's been many, many moons since I've heard a Democrat say that. And Brian, when we were building the internet, we forgot one simple thing, that the same people that designed the interstate highway system on which the internet is roughly based, designed the internet, DARPA. It was a defense project all along, and that's exactly how they're using it. So, Andrew, what are the threats to your model coming from the government, coming from forces that are going to inhibit your ability to stay free?
Well, as long as we continue down the path, because we don't operate off of a short-term cycle. You know, we're looking at a decade from now. What do we need to do to be competitive in the marketplace? What do we need to do to create the proper redundancies? And as long as we continue down that path, we've talked to all the lawyers and analysis and different types of industry folks, and we're on a space where we can really be competitive long-term, really impenetrable to, you know, some of the things that the government and other folks may try to push. But at the same time, I do believe that there's still good folks in the government that won't let us go that far. And so it's up to every single one of us to, you know, continue to vote with our feet, vote with our ballots, and also vote with our wallets. Because really, you know, if there are millions of Americans that start working with companies like myself and many others in this space, it's going to be really hard for, you know, the government or, you know, Silicon Valley to come in and disrupt us, because we'll have that continued support behind us.
Yeah, I kind of wish that when Parler got attacked, that they would have been on your infrastructure instead of using, you know, Microsoft Azure and Amazon, you know, web cloud services. And I've had problems with some, you know, as a platform owner myself, I've had problems with other, you know, web service providers and things like that, to the point where I've skipped around between so many and eventually had to get some help and get spun up on how to build my own LAMP stack on, you know, virtual servers and maintain all that myself. But I was on your website today, and you have, I just want to, you know, say thank you for providing such a great service with a great model. And the prices are great too. I'm not a paid influencer or anything, but I was just scanning the site and I thought, wow, you know, if I had seen, if I had known about this back when I was setting up my virtual servers to avoid, you know, all the censorship and, you know, condemnation for wrong think, I might have gone with Liberation Tech. That's Liberation Tech with a K, by the way, if you're out there looking for the website, liberationtech.com.
Yeah, and, you know, that is the whole purpose that we're here. You know, we've helped so many startups all the way up to presidential candidates. And so, you know, we are really here to, what I like to say, support Main Street to Wall Street. every aspect of business here in society, because, you know, I think we have a very short amount of time to really make a difference in this country. And, you know, it's going to come down to the technology companies in this cycle. And so that is where the war will be fought. You know, last time we saw it being waged with the ballots and the machines. Now we're going to see a real fight for control of the information that gets out. And so it's going to be kind of critical to really push back against that and, you know, work with aligned companies.
Absolutely. Well, Andrew, we want to thank you for everything you're doing once again and for taking the time to join us here on State of the Nation. We're about out of time, but I have one quick final question I have to ask. Are you guys in your 10-year plan looking forward to any like high technology web 3.0 blockchain based websites? What kind of stuff? I'll give you like 30 seconds if you can tell us what you got in the future, and be sure to shout your website out.
We're definitely moving in that space. You know, we're building our physical infrastructure kind of based off of the decentralized, actually the modular data center that you talked about in the beginning is going to give us that capability. It's going to allow for a massive global scale, and we look forward to announcing more of those projects in the near future.
All right. Well, you know, I had a feeling you might say that, and I have a feeling you'll be back to tell us more about it as these things develop for the company. I want to thank you for joining us. LiberationTech.com is the website. If you're looking for a place where you can host your website, you need some cloud storage and a bunch of other IT services, definitely get on over there and check that out. Give them a shout. Tell them State of the Nation sent you. Thank you so much, Andrew. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Thanks, guys.
This is State of the Nation on today's News Talk. Don't go anywhere. This is TNT.
She used to dance and dream of a better life, a brighter future, with nutritious food to eat, a chance to learn, to get an education, and do incredible things. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, she dances for the world. Together, we give children in poverty a chance to set their sights high and achieve their dreams by ensuring that they have access to healthcare, education, life skills, and more, so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves.
Gracias. Gracias.
Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today.
My dad was a farmer. The guy was bigger than life. He wasn't someone that liked to show his emotion or liked to show when he was struggling, but we all struggle. I want to show emotion to my kids. It's something that brings me so much joy, and I want them to see me working through things. Allow your kids to know that it's okay to struggle, that even dad doesn't know the answer sometimes, but we're going to figure it out together.
The conversation continues with State of the Nation's Brian McClain and Timothy Shea on today's News Talk, TNT.
Almost every job I've had, including being a teacher, has involved teaching. What I do is I learn things that are arcane or esoteric or complex, and explain them to people in ways that they can understand, which is why a lot of people are puzzled by the fact that I think that up to a third of colleges and universities in the United States need to close. You see, it's not because I'm against education, it's because I'm for it. And what our colleges and universities aren't doing is educating. One of the things we can do for our own children, and indeed for ourselves, is to get educated. Education can occur outside of a classroom. Joining us to discuss is the former CEO of Blockbuster and 7-Eleven and the author of Education is Freedom. The future is in your hands. Welcome to the State of the Nation, James Keyes.
Thank you, Timothy. It's great to be with you.
James, how can education serve as a catalyst to break the cycle of fear, ignorance, and violence, and ultimately foster hope, knowledge, and understanding?
That sounds like you read my book. That's exactly the cycle that I talk about, the need to break. And ultimately, I do believe that it comes down to knowledge. And in fact, I'll quote Yoda, who in Star Wars was teaching young Luke about this cycle of fear. And he said, ignorance basically leads to fear, and fear leads to violence, and or fear leads to anger, and then anger leads to violence. And in his words, the solution to that, of course, was the Force. Now, one could interpret that as a metaphor for faith, but one could also say that knowledge is also the antidote for fear. I use the example in the book, when you're a kid and you're scared of the dark, you call for mom, and what does she do? She turns on the light, and you realize it's really nothing to be afraid of. And that's ultimately what knowledge is. It is the light that takes away fear, and it's ultimately the antidote to a lot of the issues that we face in society today.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I was watching some of your interviews this morning, getting ready for this, and I'm really glad that you focus on the fear factor. And since you went Star Wars, I'm going to go Dune. I think Frank Herbert also covered this topic quite well in Dune. Of course, the mantra, I must not fear. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is the little death that brings total obliteration. I will face my fear. I'll permit it to pass over me and through me, and when it has gone past, I will turn the inner eye to see its path. Where the fear has gone, there will be nothing, only I remain. That's one of my favorite quotes about fear, and of course, false evidence appearing real is one that Timothy and I share also. But fear really is sort of one of the long poles in the tent when it comes to narrative management, which is something we also talk a lot about here. In the wake of the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act, hopefully most Americans now know that they can be propagandized to. There's no law against a government or an intelligence agency or a Fortune 500 company propagandizing to us, lying to us outright. And we could point to a lot of events that have happened in the last 4 years as examples. What do you think is the biggest example that, you know, people come to you with and express a lot of fear reaction about current events that may be overblown?
Well, one of the things that I'm seeing in the discussions I'm having now about education is the fear around education itself. I mean, there's a lot of irrational fear about the system and where it is. And Timothy mentioned colleges, many of them should close. I don't know, but there's a lot of misinformation out there about colleges. For example, I saw an article in Forbes that said college, the price of college is just absolutely out of touch, out of reach. And I thought, what? You know, it seemed to be out of reach when I was going to back in. They used the 1980s as an example. And so I went back to their example. It was $10,000 for room, board, and tuition in 1980. Well, in 2024 dollars, that's $50,000. And it's not as dramatic as people would think. And yet, here's my concern. If we put that fear out there that you're going to pick up so much debt, you'll never be able to pay it back, college is outrageous, it's not worth the money, et cetera, et cetera. The last thing we want to do is give our young people another excuse not to have to use education. There's plenty of tools for them to be educated on their own, but many, many of us need some structure, need some formation, et cetera, et cetera. So that's just one of many narratives that are out there that are stoking fear, stoking uncertainty. And when it comes to education, man, we've got to change the narrative, and we've got to focus on the individual, as Timothy said, but also in improving the system so that we can get America back on track to be using education as the driver of a democratic process going forward, and the driver of commerce, basically.
Yeah, and my comment wasn't because I hate colleges and universities. I'm the former president of my college alumni association, and I'm going back for my 40th reunion in a month or so. But what has to change is these useless degrees that provide no marketable skills and really hold people back. I would argue that becoming a master carpenter, master plumber, master electrician is a far more valuable education, not only for society, but for the individual and his family, than getting a degree in some latest esoteric communist critical theory discipline.
So, Timothy, let me challenge you just for a second, because I agree with you that the vocations are fine. And look, at the end of the day, what my book's all about is doesn't matter what you're learning, as long as you keep learning. So if you're going to be a plumber, be the best plumber out there, right?
Exactly.
But here's a little bit of a trap, because there's a strong narrative now. Mike Rowe's out there going, just go be a plumber, just go be a carpenter, and all that's well and good. But this is America. And while college isn't for everybody, opportunity is. And the reality is, for many of us, if we don't have the discipline of that college background, as broad or as irrelevant as it may seem, it does teach us other things and teaches us the power of collaboration, et cetera, et cetera. More importantly, for the foreseeable future, like let's say the next 20 years, eventually technology will come up with other ways to credential our abilities. But I'm looking at it from the perspective of somebody that ran a Fortune 500 company with 400,000 employees. How the heck do I pick between employees when one has a degree and one doesn't? It's really hard to measure skills in today's world. So I'm coming from a very practical perspective, telling young people, hey, if you really want to be a carpenter, go be a, follow your passion, dude. But if you think you have other interests and you want flexibility, optionality, go get that degree, because it will give you the flexibility to pivot down the road. And when you're out deciding that you want to be a plumber, but you want to open your own plumbing company, you're going to have to raise money, and you'll probably have to provide some credentials to raise that money, and a degree will help when you're out doing it. So it's a little different twist, Timothy, than what most of us are saying these days, but I'm out there being a bit of the counterpoint to the Peter Thiels, the Mike Rowe's. Even Jamie Dimon came out the other day and said, hey, why waste your money on college?
Oh, and I would agree with you wholeheartedly in that. I don't think that college is a waste of money per se, but I think that, you know, it's these certain degrees that I think kids are being deceptively sucked into to getting their degree in something that isn't going to help them down the line. I'm a huge defender of the liberal arts. People say, oh, a liberal arts degree, as though it means you're somehow going to vote Democrat for life. And I point out to them that all of the biggest donors at Boston College with their names on their buildings, they were all graduates of the College of Arts and Sciences, not the business school. So a degree in history, a degree in English, a degree in philosophy, something that shows that you can think, that you can write, that you can speak, and let's face it, that you can organize your life enough to show up on time where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there.
Oh, that's exactly right. You know, in fact, Timothy, I'll share with you, I have this debate a lot more colorfully with friends, right? And half of my friends that are really, really conservative and really bashing the liberal arts and, you know, the waste of time and what they're doing to the kids and all this stuff, were pot-smoking, anti-establishment, Vietnam War protesting liberals back in their college days. And it wasn't professors that were brainwashing them. They were kids. You know, they were kids being kids. So there's a little of that going on out there today. And it's, you know, back to that fear thing, I don't worry about kids today. I don't worry about them turning into, you know, anything that we weren't when we were kids and protesting Vietnam and all this other stuff. It's kind of kids being kids. So to your point, the breadth of education, particularly liberal arts education, really is valuable in life and contributing to society. And I'm making one more point that I think what a lot of people are forgetting is we tend to look at today, not tomorrow. So our schools, our public schools, our colleges were really geared toward the industrial age. The Rockefellers built that public school system, basically. And it's all standardization. It's mass production of educated students, right? Like we did in factories. Well, we're now in the information age, and especially with AI, information is going to go deep on a lot of subjects, and it's going to put a lot of people out of work. which means I think that breadth of knowledge is going to be way more important for a human race in a world where machines can do a lot of work for us and a lot of thinking for us. So I'm encouraging the opposite of all the specialization and everything that's going on today. And I'm a strong proponent in breadth, which supports the argument for the liberal arts education.
Yeah, you know, I think that's pretty smart. And, you know, it's easy to look at, you know, some degrees, paths these days and say, well, that's not going to get you a job. But as a, you know, my educational experience is largely information technology. You know, if I look back at where I started in that, I'm not using any of the things that I learned in 1994. You know, I'm not learning, I'm not doing Pascal, C++,
COBOL, Fortran. Yeah.
Right. Fortran, well, network stack.
I'm going back even before.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Machine language.
Cards.
Right.
I was punching cards, right? And sticking them in a machine.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
I mean, everything I was good in biology lab is now done at the push of a button. You no longer pour gels. You no longer manually load cells and run a gel electrophoresis. It's all mechanized. So your point's exactly taken.
And you know, to build on that, I have friends right now who are not programmers by trade, but they're IT savvy and they're interested in, you know, Microsoft Copilot and these sort of things. And they're, you know, teaching themselves how to build LAMP stacks. They're teaching themselves how to build servers, how to do customer interactions and use that technology to flesh that out. Whereas normally somebody would have to take a lot of time to learn that or contract somebody out to help them do it. So it is changing the landscape greatly. How do you think that's going to affect, like, because a lot of students, like myself included, when I was a freshman in college, I wasn't exactly sure what I wanted to do. And that first 2 years is kind of a liberal arts time if you're in that situation. But a lot of people would say that right now there's cultural and identity politic factors that are trying to take young people in that mindset and push them into a more politicized, radicalized sort of mindset rather than one that sets them up for a good future. So, like, what do you think about that? And how could that sort of first 2 years of maybe college be improved so that this doesn't become a fear that people have?
Well, first of all, I've got a little different point of view on how to fix the system, because there's a whole lot of theories about how to fix the public school system, how to fix colleges, et cetera, et cetera. I'm, as I said before, a big believer that our current system was built for what we needed 100 years ago. It's not built for what we need today to train people for a rapidly moving, changing, dynamic information age. So my suggestion is we have a call to action to the corporate world. Why? Think about this in business terms, right? It's a supply and demand problem. We have an increasing need a supply of educated employees well into the information age, because we're going to need smarter, more flexible, more nimble, able to change employees. Meanwhile, our education system is producing fewer and fewer and fewer of those. So what would we do as corporate America if we have a supply crisis? We're worried about chips out of Taiwan. We're building chip factories. We're the demand. We're going to create the supply. So my call to action to corporate America is don't wait for state and local government to fix this. Don't wait for colleges to fix themselves. Get in, use technology in the same way we've transformed space, automobiles, retail. Technology is at our fingertips, but what we have today is a world where Google's got Google Classroom, LinkedIn Learning, everybody's like got their own discrete. It's like the days before Microsoft Office when we had to try to figure out how to patch things together. That's what online learning is like today. Somebody needs to come in, and corporate America could, and I believe should, do this and fund, call it the Internet of Education. So an open system platform from which we could all build on and then take our technology, enhance what's going on in the classroom, not eliminate it, but enhance it dramatically so students are much more engaged and we have much more control over what's being taught. And I believe that the future is literally in our hands, both individually and collectively.
James Keyes, that's fantastic advice. I agree with that wholeheartedly. The book is Education is Freedom. The future is in your hands. I'll leave you with one more cycle. G. Michael Hoff's Hard Times Make Weak Men. Weak men make life, or hard times make good times. Good times make weak men, and weak men make hard times. That's it for tonight's State of the Nation. Stay tuned for the Jason Berma Show right here on State of the Nation.